Next on RadioSt.Pete.com, Peter's Proffer with Clearwater attorney Peter Tragos. The experienced lawyers at Tragos, Sartes, and Tragos discuss common legal questions, providing insight into the legal process and covering current events as they relate to the legal field.
Welcome back to another episode of Peter's Proffer. We're here in the courtroom of current events, as we always are. And today, we're going to talk about subpoenas. We're going to talk about what you do when you get a subpoena. We're going to talk about the different kinds of subpoena you may get served on you. So we're going to talk about how to handle that situation, because every subpoena is different. What you have to do, what's expected of you is different. Whether or not you need to call a lawyer depends on the type of subpoena you get. The consequences of not doing what the subpoena says also depends on the type of subpoena you get. So we're going to dive into all that and more. If you guys ever have a topic or something you want to talk about, something that happens in your life, a legal question that you have, or something that you just don't understand and you want defined better, please find us on social media at Tragos Law. You can post it on there. We'll listen to it. We'll go through it. We'll see if we can get an expert in, or if we are the people that know most about that topic, then we will talk about it. You can also send me an email, as always, petertragos@greeklaw.com. All right, so today we're talking subpoenas. Let's start out first by explaining what a subpoena is.
A subpoena is generally a requirement that you appear to give testimony or you appear to turn over tangible evidence. It can be one of those, it can be both of those, but it requires your appearance to give testimony. And it can be in various types of situations, trials, administrative, those kind of things, but it's the requirement that you appear. You get served with a subpoena, you've got to be there unless you have one of the defenses that allows you to avoid complying with the subpoena.
So when you're talking about being served with a subpoena, is there a specific way you have to be served with that subpoena? And is the subpoena always a piece of paper or something like that that is given to you?
There are two types of subpoenas that get issued in Florida. One is issued by the clerk of the court. The other can be issued by an attorney who is a party, represents a party in a case. Yes, it is always a piece of paper. It is served by a process server who's actually got to be licensed by the sheriff, and it can either be a deputy sheriff or, again, a licensed process server.
Okay, so you said the two people that can serve subpoenas, or as we say, have subpoena power, are lawyers who represent parties in the case and the clerk of the court.
Right.
So when the government serves a subpoena, that's technically coming from the lawyer that represents the government.
Correct.
That's who has the subpoena power.
That's right.
So it's not the United States government subpoenaing you, it's the lawyer that represents them.
Well, technically it is the government, so because the government lawyer then represents them, right?
Right. So is that different than a party, or is it the same thing?
Same thing.
The party is actually the one that's serving the subpoena.
You represent Joe Smith, you're the lawyer, you issue the subpoena, but the subpoena is on behalf of Joe Smith.
Okay, but so the government's no different than any other party?
No different.
Okay, it just seems like they have more power when they give you a subpoena. It's harder to fight a subpoena from the government.
It is scarier. Plus, when the federal government does it, sometimes an FBI agent is serving the subpoena, and that can shake you up.
Right. So, okay, so it has to be served formally. And did you say it does have to be a piece of paper that's actually served to you?
It has to be a piece of paper, but there are some requirements about who can get served with a subpoena.
Right. Go ahead. Why don't you explain, Pete, the who can be served?
And how they're served.
And is it any different than service of any other document?
Well, that's kind of a big, long explanation. But generally speaking, you can serve anyone, but the reality is you can't serve a child, meaning a four-year-old, because a four-year-old doesn't know what to do with a subpoena. So what you would have to do is make sure that you follow the rules as to it has to be an adult. If you're serving someone and you knock on the door of the house, there are certain circumstances where you can serve somebody that's 15 years of age or older. You can't serve on Sundays. You can't serve on national holidays. But beyond that, as long as you can tag the person, meaning you put it in the hand of the person or their representative,
what if
the subpoena is good.
What if you know they're in the house and you knock on the door, they don't open the door, you're the person inside the house and you don't want to open the door for that process server?
Technically, it's a crime to not accept service, to dodge service. But the reality is it's not good service if you can hear the people inside. You can't just stick it on the door and walk away. For purpose of subpoenas, it has to actually be personally served.
Right. So you can't really dodge a subpoena, but there's no real teeth. That's kind of like driving without insurance. It's illegal, but they never actually arrest the person that's driving without insurance.
Right. But there are negative ramifications that can befall you if you dodge the service of subpoena.
Sure. Okay. So now let's kind of go through some of the different kinds of subpoenas. Let's start out with a subpoena deuces tecum. What is that?
Deuces tecum is the Latin phrase, for, generally speaking, for bring stuff with you. And when we call it deuces tecum, what we're saying is we're subpoenaing you not to come to testify, but we're subpoenaing you to actually produce certain documents to us at a certain date and time.
And sometimes, so we'll talk, let's do it like this. So sometimes the deuces tecum subpoena is in conjunction or combination with a deposition subpoena or some other kind of testimonial subpoena. So what is a subpoena
ad
for a deposition?
Is that one.
Okay, what's a subpoena for a deposition?
Well, that's a subpoena like the ad testificandum where you're there to testify. But normally, if documents are involved, you do have that combination you talk about where you have to be there personally and you have to bring the documents or whatever it is that's subpoenaed. I mean, it could be a flange. It could be a piece of pipe. Anything physical evidence that you have to bring with you to the deposition can be required by that subpoena. And if you don't show up, or if you show up without what's being required, like you don't show up with the pipe, but you personally show up, you can still be held in contempt for not coming with that pipe because you're not obeying the subpoena.
Okay, so showing up to testify, if you get a subpoena for deposition and deuces tecum, and you show up to testify for the depo, but you don't bring the documents or the pipe or whatever it is with you, you still have not totally complied with the subpoena.
That's correct. And later on, we talk about enforcement. Talk about then, you know, what do you do if someone does show up without what you're asking them to show up with?
Right. Okay. So other kinds of subpoenas, criminal versus civil subpoenas. What's the difference between criminal and civil?
A criminal subpoena. Those subpoenas always have to be if they're for depositions. Criminal subpoena depositions can only be held in the courthouse where criminal cases are heard, unless you have an agreement of the parties. 99% of all depositions of criminal cases happen at the courthouse. So that's number one rule. Number two, there are local rules. Most local rules require that if the state attorney doesn't show up for that deposition, you can't do the deposition unless the state attorney is there. Next, the state attorney is the representative of the state of Florida. So when they're doing subpoenas, it's always from the government. No individual victim, let's say, a victim cannot subpoena someone to testify in a criminal case.
Because they're not an actual party.
That's right.
It's the state of Florida that is the plaintiff, for lack of a better word, or prosecuting party.
That's right. So you've got a location difference from civil, because civil can be anywhere the parties agree it can be. But that's different than criminal. You've got the parties that are different, because it's always the state of Florida as one of the parties in the criminal case.
So when Pete, talking about civil subpoenas, let's talk about a party subpoena and a non-party subpoena. Right. What's the difference?
The key difference is a party subpoena in a civil case is directed towards somebody that's somehow engaged in the case, meaning they're a defendant.
Well, they're more than just somehow engaged in the case. They're actually intimately involved in the
plaintiff,
case.
A plaintiff, somebody is actually named somehow in the pleadings.
You're either suing somebody or getting sued. Right. The main people in the case are the parties.
Yeah, a non-party subpoena is a subpoena that you send out to someone that's not involved in the case, and normally they're witnesses or they are somebody or an entity that has documentation that you need in order to prove your case.
Right. So, for instance, if this person used to work at a different place and you have a lost wage claim, you can do a non-party subpoena to their former employer for their pay records.
Correct.
So you can say, subpoena deuces tecum, just send me their pay records. You don't have to show up to testify. Okay, talk also, one of the differences between party subpoenas and non-party subpoenas is the way that they're served. Isn't there something you don't have to do if it's a subpoena to a party?
Yeah, technically, when a party has a lawyer that appears for them in a case, you can actually give the subpoena to counsel of record for that party. You don't actually have to go and tag, and that's the slang term that we use for serving a subpoena on a party. Now, on a non-party, you actually have to go through the normal rules. And I'll just share this for our listeners. When it comes to like big companies, they normally have a subpoena service department, and those those places are normally well advertised for lawyers. So if you want to serve Publix, for example, there is a fax number where they accept all those subpoenas.
And another thing on those subpoenas we're talking about, the Ducas Tecums or non-parties, there's also a 10-day rule that you have 10 days to object. If you're a party, you have 10 days to object to those subpoenas.
Well, that's what I was going to say. So before we jump there, when you're a party in a case, you have to be notified of any non-party subpoenas that the other side files. So when like if it's I'm Peter Tragos suing Peter Sardis and I want to do a non-party subpoena to Publix to see what medication he bought there, I have to tell Pete and notify him that I am filing this non-party subpoena to Publix. And then that's where what you're talking about comes in, where if Pete wants to object to that non-party subpoena, he can. So even though Pete's not the one being subpoenaed, you can still object to other people being subpoenaed in your case.
See, in a criminal case, keep in mind who the parties are, every subpoena is a non-party subpoena because the state of Florida...
Except for anything they get from the defendant.
Which the defendant has a Fifth Amendment right not to give.
Right.
So the depositions that you'll take are always be non-parties. That's why on the Ducas Tecums in depositions, they always have that 10-day rule where the person you're serving to produce something can object within 10 days to producing it.
The person or the party or both?
Well, there's only two parties in criminal cases. It's the
person.
Okay,
but I'm talking about in civil cases.
Oh, so
the person,
right.
The person, of course, can object to it. Publix can object to it. But also, in addition to Publix, the party can object to it.
Sure.
So if Pete doesn't think they should be able to get his records from Publix, but Publix doesn't care to hand them over, Pete can still object to try to stop that production. So and the reason we're talking about all this is sometimes just normal people, like people listening to this podcast, get served with subpoenas. And you should know you can actually object to that subpoena, but not only that, other people in the case can object before you do whatever that subpoena tells you to do. So that's kind of the interaction of what happens with all these subpoenas is important. And let's move on to talk about out-of-state and out-of-country subpoenas. How does that differ?
Well, out-of-state subpoenas, there's a Uniform Act that Florida is not part of. That other states have joined that make it easy for you to enforce a subpoena out of state. So if Florida wants to issue a subpoena for Joe Smith in Georgia, they only have to go up to the clerk's office, get it certified, and they can have it served in Georgia. However, because Florida is not part of the Uniform Act, if someone wants to subpoena somebody in Florida for a deposition, let's say it's a Georgia case, they have to go through all sorts of rigmarole. They've got to go to a court. They've got to get a court order. A commissioner has to be appointed to supervise the deposition. Florida, for some reason, didn't sign on to the easy way, and we do it the hard way.
Is it any different in criminal cases? Is it easier to serve somebody in Florida because they all work together?
No. And remember now, we're only talking about state cases. We're not talking about federal
cases.
Right,
but I'm saying the state attorney's office in New York, if they wanted to serve somebody in Florida, the Pinellas County State Attorney's Office won't just help them serve them?
No, they have to do the same process as everybody else. They've got to go get a court order and have a commissioner appointed.
Okay, what about out of country?
You can do it. There are actually international treaties that talk about subpoenas. They are either one of two things, extremely complicated, that requires you to go to their court system and open up a claim to be able to do it, or they're very simple, meaning that they'll just accept your subpoena and they'll serve it on your behalf, or they'll allow, for example, the U.S. embassy or the U.S. Consulate to serve it for you. Again, country by country, depending on who's part of the treaty or not.
And hypothetically, a lot of times you have to go through the State Department in order to have a subpoena enforced in another country, because they will go, they have a thing called letters rogatory. And these letters of rogatory are cooperation agreements between different agencies in different countries. And when you're doing a criminal case, a lot of times you do have to go through the State Department to have a criminal subpoena enforced in another country, because that country doesn't have the same crimes we do, doesn't have the same laws we do.
Right. So everything's called something else.
Right. Like there's no conspiracy crime in Switzerland, for instance. So they don't understand the word conspiracy.
All right. Next, let's talk about an administrative subpoena.
These are administrative agencies. For instance, in DUIs, you have the Division of Motor Vehicles that conducts hearings. Those are administrative subpoenas that are issued by a state agency, not criminal, but like the Department of Revenue issues subpoenas to people to get their record in order to see if they paid sales tax. These are, again, subpoenas. You're required to do them. You're required to comply with them, but they're issued by state agencies, administrative agencies.
And do they subpoena normal people?
Yes.
Okay.
Subpoena normal people all the time, and in order to, you have the same rights to object to those as any other subpoena.
So what is the difference between an administrative subpoena and just a regular subpoena to testify?
To the individual who gets it, almost none.
Okay.
Because it's enforced the same way. To the way it's issued, it's a different thing because it's not a lawyer issuing it. It's not the clerk of court issuing it. It's the Department of Revenue or the Division of Motor Vehicles.
So that's something we didn't mention earlier that has subpoena power.
Yes.
Or some administrative
agencies.
There's
some statutes that give administrative agencies subpoena power.
Okay. Next, let's talk about trial subpoenas. It's pretty obvious, but...
Yeah, those are technically the subpoenas you serve to someone to have them appear for trial.
And does that, can you combine a trial subpoena with a subpoena duces tecum?
You can.
Right. And you make sure they bring whatever that is to trial with them if they're in control of the pipe or documents or something.
Right. Truth be told, again, for the normal person, it doesn't make a difference to you. You're getting a subpoena. It's just really how it's characterized for the legal system.
Well, it makes a difference because, you know, if you're just going to go to a deposition, you're going to a lawyer's office or a court reporter's office. If you're going, if you get a trial subpoena, you're going to court with a judge and potentially a jury to sit there and testify in open court.
And the other difference is a subpoena. For example, for a deposition, has a specific date and time, meaning you're going to be there for 2 hours, where they'll tell you the time frame of your participation. A trial subpoena doesn't have that. You could be subpoenaed to says, you know, trial starts on Monday the 18th, and it doesn't go away until, you know, we're done with you.
All right. Next, an investigative subpoena.
An investigative subpoena is basically a Chapter 27 subpoena, where the Florida statutes allows the state attorney to issue subpoenas to investigate a crime. These subpoenas don't require any notice to anybody. For instance, those other, we were talking about deposition subpoenas, everybody has to know that you're issuing a deposition subpoena, all the parties.
So in a criminal case, do they have to let you know if they're non-party subpoenaing something?
Yes, the state attorney's office has to let you
know. But they don't have to if they're just investigating a crime.
Correct.
So if they're investigating George Tragos for a crime and they subpoena Publix records for George Tragos, they don't have to tell you.
Correct. And that's the same way, except in Florida we have a different system. But in the federal system, when the grand jury issues a subpoena to investigate somebody, like, let's say they're investigating General Motors or someone, mm-hmm. the grand jury is secret, doesn't have to tell anyone they're issuing subpoenas investigating General Motors. In Florida, we have a one-man grand jury, which is the state attorney. So they have a secret way of issuing subpoenas, and it's called Chapter 27.
Okay. So, and that's something completely different that doesn't exist in civil cases. You can't file subpoenas pre-suit without the other party knowing.
Yes, unless you get court permission. Even in civil cases, if you get court permission before you file a civil suit, you can issue a subpoena. Those are very rare that a court ever grants that.
Right, and you can keep it secret as well?
It's not secret once it happens. It's a public record.
Right.
But you can do a pre-suit subpoena,
okay.
Pre-suit discovery.
I've never heard of that.
It's very rare.
Okay, so the main part of... you know, this podcast and why we do this podcast, because we've gotten these questions before, is what do you do if you've been subpoenaed? And we're going to have to answer this question with some qualifiers, and we're going to have to say it depends, obviously, on what kind of subpoena you get. But let's just assume you get a subpoena for a deposition and a subpoena duces tecum as a witness in a civil case. What do you do at that point?
Well, first off, you can always hire a lawyer to make sure that the subpoena complies with the rules. But the rules are, first off, was the subpoena properly served on you? Did you actually get handed the subpoena? Was it served at the right, you know, date and time?
Which, again, you're not going to be able to know necessarily on your own, but you can hire a lawyer to figure that out.
Next is the subpoena requiring you to go to a specific or the right place? Most subpoenas cannot be enforced outside of the county and where you live. So if you live in Clearwater, let's say, in Pinellas County, but you're subpoenaed for a deposition in Polk County. Well, you don't have to go to a deposition in Polk County.
They have to have it in
witnesses,
Pinellas.
Right, have a right to be deposed in the county where they live.
Which, again, is something you wouldn't necessarily know on your own, but that a lawyer could answer for you.
Another is it overly burdensome? In other words, the Duces Tecum tells you to bring 50,000 documents with you. Well, that might be a little extreme. So you would have a right to file a motion, have a lawyer file a motion, challenging the scope of the subpoena being too broad, too many years, too large.
Let's with some qualifiers, just indicate that let's presume you get a subpoena and whatever they're asking for is not difficult for you to produce. It's something that's in the normal course of your business, and it's just easy for you to give it to somebody. The easiest thing to do is normally contact the lawyer that issued the subpoena and just kind of figure out what they're looking for. And a whole lot of times, communicating with that lawyer's office will give you, you know, a limitation of what they're looking for. And again, they'll normally be easy to work with and say, just give us these documents by email and we're good to go.
Of course, the risk is a non-lawyer calling a lawyer.
Well, yeah, but that's what I was going to say. So before you do anything, you are the one that knows how you're involved in this situation. So if you witnessed a car accident and that's what they want you to bring is your cell phone camera picture that has, you know, the picture of the damage, and you want to call them and just give them that picture, that's fine. Or you want to tell them what you saw, that's fine. If you think you may be in trouble or mixed into this and you may be found liable, like you were one of the other cars that was in this 5-car pileup, then you might not want to just call them or hand over whatever it is that you have, because they may also be trying to blame you for the accident. So you've got to kind of think back when you get subpoenaed, how am I involved in this situation? Do I know? Do I want to speak freely about it? Is there any way this could come back on me? And you have to be prepared to do a couple things. You have to be prepared to testify under oath, under penalty of perjury. If you lie, you can go to jail. You have to be prepared to produce documents and produce correct documents, accurate documents, and the full documents that they're asking for. Because if you say you're going to testify and you say you're going to produce documents, you will be held to that. So that's what the important thing is to look at when you get a subpoena. So what happens then if you get a subpoena and you just ignore it?
Well, can go back. There's one other thing that I want to talk about objecting. The other is the Fifth Amendment privilege. In that, if you think you're going to be incriminating yourself by complying with the subpoena, then you have a right to claim the Fifth Amendment and not comply with it.
Okay, so if you get a subpoena and you just totally ignore it, then what happens?
Well, then you can be found in contempt. What happens?
And what does that mean?
The person that served you with the subpoena has a right to go to a court to see a judge, have the judge issue an order for you to show cause why you shouldn't be held in contempt for failing to comply with the subpoena. Then a judge has a sheriff serve you with an order to show up in court. You show up in court. If you don't have a good excuse, the judge can do a couple things. One, the judge can throw you in jail until you comply with the subpoena. Two, the judge can throw you in jail as punishment for not complying with the subpoena. The judge can fine you. There are all sorts of things a judge can do to you if he finds that you don't have a good excuse for not complying.
So just to break it down a little bit slower. So an order to show cause means you actually have to come to court and explain yourself in front of a judge.
Right.
So kind of like you're almost the defendant in the case.
Well, it's your burden.
At that point. Right. Or I guess, whatever. So at that point, you've got to come and actually explain why you did not comply with the subpoena. And I didn't want to do it, and I just threw it away in the trash can is not going to be a good excuse in front of the judge. And then if you don't have a good enough cause for the reason you didn't, and some legitimate causes, like you talked about before, is it's overly burdensome or it's outside your county, the judge is still probably not going to be happy with you when the fact that you didn't just tell the lawyer that or make an objection or something, but you just decided to ignore it. So if the judge shows that you didn't have a good reason not to comply with the subpoena, you could actually go to jail or be fined.
Correct.
Okay. So now let's talk about a criminal subpoena or an investigative subpoena. If you were to get something like this, what would you do? And how does that differ from if you're just a witness in a civil case?
Yeah. I was going to say the procedure is a little bit different. When you get an investigative subpoena or a criminal subpoena, the first thing you need to do is calm down and stop crying. The second thing you need to do is determine, is it directed towards you? Or are you, again, just providing documents for someone else? When you've got investigative subpoenas, those are, I don't want to say you take them a little bit more seriously, but you take those a little bit more seriously.
All right, and realize investigative subpoenas mean someone's being investigated for a crime. It could be you, it could be your brother, it could be your company, but someone has said a crime has been committed and the state attorney is looking into it.
Okay, and what should you do if you get that kind of subpoena?
Well, if you get that kind of subpoena, first you need to make a determination. Number one, will I incriminate myself if I go in there? One of the cool things about Florida is if you go into a state attorney's office under an investigative subpoena, you are protected. Anything you say pursuant to that subpoena cannot be used against you. That's not the same in every state, and it certainly is not the same in federal court. But in Florida, we have determined that if you're forced
in
to testify.
In state courts in Florida.
Right,
in Florida. Because in federal courts in Florida is not like
totally
this.
Different.
Right.
But in state court, you're protected as long as you have the subpoena in your hand. A lot of times what happens is the state attorney's office will issue an investigative subpoena. You will show up at the state attorney's office ready to testify. And then they will say, look, we're withdrawing the subpoena, but we'll still let you come in and testify. And what that is just a trick, which means you don't have the protection of the subpoena anymore. So if you do go in and testify, they can use that testimony against you.
And the same thing with documents at that point. If you're talking about a criminal or investigative subpoena and they're subpoenaing documents, those
right.
documents can be used against you unless you're saying with the protection of the state of Florida.
Right. And another thing
does
is,
that same protection apply to documents?
Well, the same protection. Well, you wouldn't give the documents because you would be saying, I possess those documents.
Oh, okay.
So you'd be incriminating yourself by saying you're in possession of documents. Now, an important distinction, if the subpoena is to a corporation, rather than an individual. Corporations don't have a Fifth Amendment privilege. So if a corporation has been subpoenaed to produce documents, somebody from that corporation has to show up with the documents.
Okay, so how would you challenge a subpoena in that situation?
Well, first off, you'd file a motion to challenge it based on the Fifth Amendment, if they're going to withdraw that subpoena. But you can't, again, in state court, we can't do that because you don't have a Fifth Amendment privilege if you're under subpoena
for
investigation.
So what do you do then? What can you do? Can you still object that it's overly burdensome and things like that if it's a criminal subpoena?
Yes, you can still object to those things and the time. A lot of times subpoenas will come in, people will be served for appearance the next day. So they don't have time to talk to a lawyer. They don't have time to make travel arrangements. So those kind of things can be challenged.
So what do you do to challenge that yourself? If you don't have time to talk to a lawyer, do you call the state attorney's office? Do you show up in court? Like, how do you challenge that if you're just a normal person and you don't know what to do and they say you have to show up the next day?
You know, normally you're not going to get something like that. But if you do, your best bet is to somehow document what you're doing because you may have to get in front of a judge someday on a motion to show cause why you shouldn't be held in contempt. And explain why you did it, why you didn't appear. And if it's something like, look, I'm out of the state right now and I can't appear, but I called them to let them know that, at least you've covered yourself and you've got some sort of a letter or an email or something documenting why you can't comply. But those are tough. At that point, you're probably looking at motions to quash and all kinds of complicated legal
stuff.
And
it's also very interesting because those investigative subpoenas, again, no one knows. So the person being investigated may not even know they're being investigated. They themselves may not have a lawyer. And so their corporation may be subpoenaed for some things, and they not even know it.
Hey, George, can you do a motion to quash an investigative subpoena? Can you actually go to court and ask the judge to...
Yes. And any subpoena, a court has jurisdiction over any subpoena. So you can always go to court to move to quash the subpoena or to limit the subpoena's application. Like if they're saying we want 10 years worth of records, a court can limit that and say, okay, you only have to give 3 years.
Whatever. Yeah. Okay. So it sounds like, and we've made a lot of comments, and I definitely think there are some subpoenas you absolutely need a lawyer for. Is there any situation where somebody gets a subpoena where you think they do not need to call a lawyer to get some advice before answering that subpoena?
You know, it's hard to advise somebody not to get a lawyer because you don't know their circumstances. Someone may think, hey, look, I did nothing wrong. And so I'm just going to go in there and tell the truth. And the next thing you know, they get arrested. So that's the problem is that subpoenas are a way to entrap people into saying things.
Well, what if it's just a civil subpoena? Do you think they still should contact a lawyer if they're just a witness in a civil case?
That's a tough one because, again, you just don't know the circumstances. You don't know how broad the subpoena is. You don't know if they're looking to include them in the lawsuit and add them as a defendant later on after they speak to the court.
It's kind of like saying, you know, you have an infection or something that looks disgusting on your arm. Do you call a doctor or not? It's like, well, your arm could fall off. You don't really know what the infection is. Probably call a doctor and let them figure out what it actually is.
If
nothing else, they can put your mind at ease if the lawyer says you don't need a lawyer for this, but they can explain what it means to you.
See, and that's why also the rules have certain protections in them for witnesses. For instance, a child under the age of, I think it's 16, the deposition has to be videotaped so that they have a record of exactly what happens in that deposition. It's not required in all cases, but it is required in where you depose children. So there are protections in the rules, but those protections are something only a lawyer really knows how to enforce.
Right, so it's something you at least probably want to run by a lawyer, and they can tell you whether or not it's serious. So hopefully now you learned a little bit more about what subpoenas are and where they kind of come from and what you do if you get subpoenaed one day, which hopefully doesn't happen. But hope you guys enjoyed the episode, and we'll be back with you next time.
You've been listening to Peter's Proffer with Clearwater attorney Peter Tragos. The experienced lawyers at Tragos, Sartes, and Tragos discuss common legal questions, providing insight into the legal process and covering current events as they relate to the legal field. Find out more at TragosLaw.com.